Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Howell, Michigan, earned a bachelor's degree in management of human resources from Spring Arbor University, and a master's degree in management and administrative services from the University of Texas, Dallas. For 20 years, he was an executive coach, leadership consultant, author, and speaker for Colt Communications. On September 21st, 2007, his wife Sharon suffered a devastating stroke. The author of Lead to Lift Up Others, Leadership Insights from a Caregiver's Journey, his name, Ross Woodstock. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Ross Woodstock, the author of Lead to Lift Up Others, Leadership Insights from a Caregiver's Journey. Ross, welcome, an honor to have you.
Jack, thank you. It's great to be here with you today.
Can we start by you offering an opening prayer this evening?
I'd be happy to do that. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this opportunity to get together today and just have a conversation and pray that you would give us all wisdom, God, to take this conversation where you want it to go, and that you would just take whatever comes out of this conversation and use it for your good, Father. Just pray for a good time today, and just pray for safety for everyone traveling home, and that, again, that this message would resonate and do great things in the lives of people who hear it today. I ask these things in your name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Let's go back. Growing up Howell, Michigan, talk about your childhood, your mom and your dad.
Howell, Michigan, a small town, a lot different than it is today. Today, it's a suburb. Back in those days, it was 5,000 people. Brighton was 5,000 people. And that 10-mile stretch in between Howell and Brighton, there wasn't anything there. far cry from what it is today. But it was a typical small town. Had a lot of great friends. My mother and father, and I had one brother, older brother, 6 years older than myself. And enjoyed a normal life. Back in those days, we played outdoors all the time. We played baseball in the spring, in summer. You played football in the fall. You played basketball in the winter. And it wasn't, you know, that was kind of life for us. My father died when I was 9 years old, had a heart attack. That was probably the most challenging thing I dealt with as a child, you know, not having a father. You know, my mom did a great job. She worked, you know, a lot of it was uncommon in those days, back in the old days. She was a believer in letting us kids make our own mistakes, and, you know, within reason. she was a strong, independent woman, and I learned a lot from her. So,
what's the biggest thing you learned from her, Ross?
I think. Being an independent thinker, and being respectful of others, and the value of hard work.
All right, you graduate from Spring Arbor University, and then you embark on a 27-year career in the media, first in radio, then in TV. Talk about that 27-year chapter.
It was a great career. Really enjoyed it. I started in the day. I really didn't have any training or anything. I wanted to be in radio. I wanted to be a journalist. I grew up in the days of Walter Cronkite on TV, and I had interested in news, and so I wanted to be on the radio. I didn't have any training. I didn't have any education. So I set out to look for a small radio station that would take an entry-level person. And I went around to about six radio stations within a half an hour drive of where I lived in the Lansing area. And nobody would talk to me. I mean, I had one owner spent 30 minutes with me. She was very gracious, gave me some good advice. And there was one owner, the last place I went was up in St. John's, and a guy by the name of Bob Dittmer. And I to this day, I don't know what he saw in me, but he said, you know, I might have something part-time in a couple of months, so check back with me. So I went back every couple of weeks. I knew when he was on the air, so I timed my arrival right when I knew he was getting off the air, and I talked to him. I just kept going back until he finally gave me a part-time job. And I write about this in my book, which you talked about a moment ago, that the importance of just the fact that he saw something in me that other people didn't and gave me a chance. He believed in me, and that really became a cornerstone for a lot of my leadership philosophy, too, is the importance of leaders believing and seeing potential in other people. And he gave me that opportunity. That was my foot in the door, and I went on and worked in radio for a few years and had an opportunity to work at a couple of television stations and enjoyed the relationships. A lot of people that you would know here in the Detroit area working today came up through the Lansing area and got an opportunity to work with some really incredible people along the way, and I'm very, very grateful.
When I tell people that I had no training and the late, great Mike Feasey gave me an unbelievable chance, their answer is always, Jack, it shows.
Well, it probably showed with me, too, but I got away with it for a while. So.
All right, what's the difference between radio and TV?
Well, obviously, the TV was the visual medium. Radio was, at the time that I was in radio, I was kind of coming out of its heyday in news, where a lot of stations did. I was working in the Lansing area, and at the time I was working in the newsroom, we had, I think, five people working on our newsroom. You don't see that anymore. Radio's kind of just doesn't do a lot. And the role of doing local news as far as electronic media was concerned shifted over to television right about that time. And so that was, I think, the influence that television has as far as news is concerned really would be the biggest difference. We didn't have a WJR, you know, 50,000-watt clear channel station, you know, back in those days. Had a lot of good stations, but as far as news was concerned, it really shifted over to TV.
We're talking Ross Woodtuck. When we come back, we're going to go to 2003, and he's with Colt Communications. And I'm Jack Brasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Brasula. We're with Ross Woodstock. Starting in 2003, he's been an executive coach, leadership consultant, author, and speaker. So let's talk about entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. What do they have in common, Ross?
I think one of the big things that entrepreneurs and great leaders have in common is vision, the ability to see things that other people don't, the ability to see a path forward when other people, you know, want to give up. They have unrelenting commitment to getting to the goal, and they're not going to be deterred. And I think work ethic's another thing with entrepreneurs that is really important as well.
I quote you now. Your work as a leader is not about you.
Right. It's not. It's about the people. It's about our teams, about the people we work with. That we're there as leaders really to support them and to help them grow. And I talked earlier about my first boss in radio, Bob Dittmer, and how he saw something in me. And I think that's the other thing I think about the greatest leaders. They see that potential in the people around them. And the ability, and a lot of times we don't even know what we're capable of. Most of us don't know what we're capable of doing. And it takes somebody else who's out there who can see that potential and then help people not only see the potential that they have to do things, but help them develop strategies to harvest that potential and become the best person they can be and the best leader they can be. And I think that's what the best leaders do. And you know what? People want to work for people like that. You take a look, Jack, at any survey that's out there in the last few years when people ask employees, what's important to you about where you work? The number one or number two thing on the list now is always, I want to work someplace where they're going to help me develop my potential. Hmm. People value that more than a raise. And so I write in the book about the four most powerful words in leadership.
And you took the next question right out of my mouth. Okay.
And they are, I believe in you. And great leaders believe in their people. And they help them. Their people know that their dreams are important to the leaders. That if that's your dream, you know, I want you to be able to achieve that and to help people, develop that potential. And when people develop their potential, everybody wins. Because, first of all, that has a direct impact on the bottom line. If everybody's firing at their best potential, your teams are going to be more cohesive. The production quality is going to be better. There's bottom line all to that. And most important, when you talk to business people today, what's the biggest challenge you have right now? Talent attraction and retention. How do I get and keep good people? That's how you get in good. You keep good people is having leaders who believe in those people and will do whatever they can to help those people develop their full potential.
Scotty Bowman's probably the greatest hockey coach of all time. One time they asked him, what do all great hockey coaches have in common? And his answer was, a great goalie. So, okay. Another thing that great leaders have is they're great listeners. Mm-hmm. How do I learn to become a great listener?
That's a great question. Listening is like flexing a muscle. The more you practice it, the better you can get at it. And it starts with just, first of all, just awareness of the importance of listening to people and listen to engage with them. Listen to hear what they're saying and not reload. Start thinking about how you want to respond to them, but listen to really understand where they're coming from. So, a lot of it is, there are things that you can practice, maintaining, good eye contact, blocking out distractions is one thing, turning your phone off, killing those email notifications that come in and cause you to distract. I'm famous for, Jack, when people want to talk to me, I'm sitting there, I'm typing away on my keyboard, and sometimes I keep typing, and people have called me out on that before, and I have to say, hey, I need to stop and turn and give this person the attention that they deserve. And so asking questions back to people when you're listening to them for clarification lets them know that you've been listening to them and that you care about what they're saying.
All right, I quote you again. The need for outstanding leaders today is more pressing than ever? Really?
We really need great leaders in the world. I think we see it wherever we go, whether it's in business, whether it's in government, these are tough times for people. When you talk about wherever you go, every organization, everybody there is doing more with less. They're running at full speed, and I do a lot of coaching. I do a lot of leadership training and hear it all the time. People are just constantly, they're living life by brush fire. They go from one brush fire to another all day long. And then they put out a brush fire, they go off to another one. They go from meeting to meeting to meeting. They don't even have time a lot of times to take a breath. And so for a lot of people that gets to be, overwhelming and they feel overloaded. And we really need leaders who really emphasize the importance of helping people to take care of themselves, emphasizing work-life balance to make sure that people are, getting their time off, that they're disconnecting from work. We need leaders who are helping people see that no matter what you're going through, there's a positive path forward. And I think this is what really defines a lot of leaders, the best leaders, is they'll see that no matter how tough it is out there, there's a way that we can get there. And that doesn't mean that you're positive to the point of telling people, everything's okay when it isn't. It means I'm positive about our ability to get through this, and here's how we're going to do it, and to help people to move forward. And we really need leaders who can do that.
If you want to learn more, www.ross, Ross, Woodstock, coaching.com. All right, Ross. Describe Ross Woodstock for us in early 2007 and also his priorities.
Early 2007, I was working to grow in a newer business that I've been with. You know, when I went over to Cole Communication and started doing public relations and strategic communications work, and I always struggled with new business development. It was always a challenge for me, and the economy was starting to go south about that time. As you'll recall, we were headed into a pretty difficult recession at that time. So that's where we were. That's kind of where we were at from a business standpoint. Life was good with the family. The kids were grown and moved out, and my wife and I have a good marriage, and so that really pulled us through a lot of challenging times.
All right, we're talking to Ross Woodstock. When we come back, we're going to go to Friday, September 21st, 2007. And I'm Jack Grisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Grisula, and we're with Ross Woodstock. If you want to learn more, www.rosswoodstockcoaching.com. Ross, Friday, September 21st, 2007, you wake up at 4:45 a.m. Please.
I went into the den of my home and saw my wife, Sharon, sitting up, and she was unresponsive. And so I called the paramedics to my home, and as they were looking over her, I heard from the other room, one of the paramedics said, "This doesn't look good." The next several hours were just a blur of activity. There was the ambulance ride to the hospital where I prayed over Sharon with her and pleaded with her to wake up. There was the flurry of activity in ER when they're hooking her up to all these devices, and a conversation with an ER doc who implied that Sharon might not make it, and even if she did, I had to be thinking about quality of life. And then there's the time phone calls to family and friends and all of those things. As it turned out, Sharon had suffered a stroke. The good news is she did survive. It was been a long road. She's still alive and doing very well today. she had to have surgery a couple days later to put a stent in her carotid artery because her carotids were 100% block. One of them was 100%, one was 90%. But she did survive. She's had a lot of therapy and really was able to continues to live a good life. She needs help. She gets around mostly in a wheelchair. She walks short distances with a walker, but she enjoys the things that are really important to her, Jack. She is a homemaker. She can do those things. And as a wife and a mom and a friend, she can't drive or can't go up and down steps or anything like that. So it kind of limits, some of the places that she can go. But that's what changed our lives. And she's been through so much. And that's what I wrote in the book was really about over the last 17 years, watching her and marveling at how she's dealt with all her challenges and how the things that she was going through and the way she dealt with them, to me, lined up with some of the characteristics of the best leaders in the world. And that's what I tried to bring out in the book is what some of those characteristics are. But, as far as me, I became her caregiver. And that's where, and that was something that I was not wired to be a caregiver. I didn't feel equipped to do it. Although, as you know, Jack, God will equip you to do whatever He wants you to do, whether you think you're qualified for it or not. And so I've kind of learned as I've gone along. And some days are good. Some days I don't do so well. Sharon likes to say that she has the best help that we can afford.
What do you say, Ross, to a family who has just experienced a major stroke?
I would tell people that there's there is a path forward, and it may not be evident to you now, but there is a path forward that'll be a good one, and there is help, and don't feel you have to go it alone. There's a lot of help out there. There's a lot of different places that you can go to get that help, and don't try to take it all on yourself, and make sure you take care of yourself too.
All right, another listener says, Ross, I just wish that what happened to my spouse or child had happened to me instead.
We wonder sometimes, it's even for people of faith like we are, that you still can't help but wondering, why God does things the way that he does. And, it doesn't always make sense to us. And it doesn't always seem fair. And that's where faith comes in, is just to know that he's sovereign, he's in control, and everything's going to make sense to us someday. And some of it he reveals to us as we go along. Some of it we're not going to know until we get to the other side. But, be strong in your faith.
All right. When we had lunch about a month ago, you gave me some statistics. And one you said, Jack, today in America, there are 53 million family caregivers.
Really?
That's going to grow a lot, Jack. You think about the baby boomer generation, 12,000 people a day are turning 65. And so all these baby boomers are going to need, not all of them, but I mean, many of these are going to need help at some point down the road. And so the number of family caregivers is going to grow. The need for them are going to grow rapidly in the next few years. By the year 2034, for the first time in our country's history, we're going to have more people over the age of 65 than we have under the age of 18. And that's really setting us up for a pretty serious situation when it comes to the needs that all those people are going to have.
All right, another statistic you told me. 50% of people in their 40s and 50s will be called upon to be an unpaid caregiver within the next 5 years. Let me say that again. 50% of people in their 40s and 50s will be called upon to be an unpaid caregiver within the next 5 years.
Really?
It's really growing. I was just I was on a call the other day with a client talking about doing some team building in the organization. Before we started the conversation, one of the leaders on the team said to me, gosh, we've just had this incredible run of people on our team who've all of a sudden they have to take care of people in their families. They're talking about dementia and all the other things that are happening. It is an issue that is kind of a silent one, and particularly as it relates to people who are trying to continue to work, and that's really become a big issue in the workforce today, is because we got like 26 million family caregivers in the workforce, and it's a real struggle for many of them. I talk in the book about some of the challenges that I had, where I almost had a nervous breakdown a couple of times. Trying to balance my new role as a caregiver with my role at work. And what happens, Jack, with folks at work are suffering, they have about 12 days a month that they take off absenteeism. They suffer from presenteeism, trying to do their job, and they're distracted, which hurts, productivity at work. A number of people report emotional, mental health challenges. Some of these family caregivers have physical health declines as a result of the work that they're doing, and financial struggles as well. And all of these things are affecting the workplace. A number of these caregivers eventually determine that they can't do it. And so they're either cutting back to part-time or they're leaving the workforce altogether. And so it's creating a lot of challenges, and it's only going to become more severe.
We're talking to Ross Woodstock, the author of Lead to Lift Up Others, Leadership Insights from a Caregiver's Journey. There's a listener listening and says, Ross, I just don't have the patience.
Join the crowd. My wife tells me some days I have the patience of Job, and then the next day she's telling me, you need to learn more patience. So I'm somewhere in between. I think both things are true.
So, all right, I quote you once more. Jack, after more than a decade as a caregiver, I've come to the realization that I like being a caregiver.
Yeah, it's easily the most rewarding thing I've ever done. It's amazing how it's changed me as a human being, and to be able to really focus on putting my wife and her needs first, and to help her and to be there for her, has been enormously rewarding experience, without question.
We're talking to Ross Woodstock, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible. Of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.
Anything is possible.
I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're with Ross Woodstock, whose wife, Sharon, suffered a devastating stroke September 21st, 2007. Russ, what screams across to anybody that's around you for a while is that you're not mad at God. Why not?
Well, if anybody should be mad at God, it should be Sharon. She's a person of incredible faith herself, and she has her moments like everybody else. But she is a person who believes that God has a plan, God is sovereign, He's in control, and that He also promises that He's gonna heal her at some point someday, and that she's gonna have that. She has that to look forward to. God, I think the question a lot of people ask, especially people who aren't believers, a lot of times is, how could a good and loving God, let evil things happen in the world? I mean, that's always the question, that I think really blocks a lot of people from having faith in God. And we have to understand that God does have a plan. He is sovereign, and His plan is perfect. We just can't see it, And faith is really the understanding that if we were in God's shoes, we'd do exactly the same thing. But we can't see things from His perspective. He's up here, we're down here on earth. And as we go through life, God will reveal some of it to us. We'll start to have, now I understand why that happened. Now I understand why I went through this. But we're not going to get to understand everything. We don't get to understand the why until we get to heaven. And then we'll understand, and we'll be good with it.
Person listens and says, earlier on in a previous segment, you said, one thing I say to caregivers is take care of yourself. Ross, with all due respect, you don't understand. I don't have the time to take care of myself.
Yeah, that is a challenge, especially people that, you know, if they're family caregivers and they're working, or they're people, there are a lot of caregivers out there now. They call them the sandwich generation, where they're caring for, they've got their own children at home and they're caring for elderly parents at the same time. And it's a very difficult situation. This is a topic, I do a lot of coaching around this and a lot of work in training programs where, you know, what we encourage people to take a look at, you know, what are the things that you can do, you know, kind of for a healthier lifestyle, whether it's more sleep or eating better, and then to try to put some strategies into place, you know, again, to achieve some work-life balance. What's that look like for you? And then I encourage people to just pick one thing. What's that one thing that you could do today? And just work on that, and work on making that a habit. Maybe it's going for a walk a couple times a week. You know, could you commit to going to a walk for a couple, and just make that a habit? Maybe it could be, it does a lot of things for a caregiver. It gets you out of the house for a few minutes. It gets you, clears your head. But just work on that one thing and then build on that. Get that sort of, so that becomes hardwired into your DNA, and then grow it from there. Maybe you take three walks a week after that. It could be the same thing with your diet or with your rest and things of that nature. So it becomes so overwhelming that I think we there's a tendency to think I can't do that, and we just don't do anything. So take a manageable step. Identify that one manageable step that you can take and just work on that for now and then grow it from there.
You have a ministry where you go to entrepreneurs, businesses, and you talk to them about the realization today of all these caregivers and what they should be doing to have a win-win. What's your basic message to these business organizations?
The family caregivers who are in the workforce are so incredibly important to our workforce. We have to have them in the workforce. And we not only have to have them in the workforce, we need them to thrive in the workforce. And so taking a look at the skills that they bring great leadership skills like empathy, patience, compassion, listening. We need that in our organization. So it behooves us to give them to support them, to let them know that we're there to help them and that we care. And that really just starts with awareness of the fact that what they're going through and that offering them to support that. So,
speaking of awareness, I quote you again, 40% of caregivers, their managers don't even know they're a caregiver.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of times people are afraid to tell them. They're afraid maybe they're going to get passed over for promotion, or there's just going to be other difficulties involved at work. So I encourage people, because this affects every organization, you know, large and small, and I encourage people to just start by realizing that unpaid caregivers who feel supported by just one person have a 40% lower risk of depression and a 30% lower risk of anxiety. So what I encourage people is, to starting point in an organization is, be that one person. Be that person who's there to support those family caregivers. Better serving unpaid caregivers and leveraging their skill sets, not only good for the caregivers, it's good for the whole organization for all the reasons that we talked about earlier, that it has a direct and measurable top and bottom line impact, and it improves productivity. It helps you keep and attract and retain talent. And it just becomes, and when you do that, not only do you have happier, healthier, more productive family caregivers at work, you have an organization that's more attractive to all talent and a place where people want to work.
All right, Ross, half of the businesses in America have fewer than 10 people. Some of those people are listening and saying, Ross, my business can't afford to do that. I've got four people.
I think that's a great question. And really, you're right. Most jobs are in small businesses. There's all sorts of things that people can do that are no cost, low cost, you know, just like anything else. There's medium cost, there's higher cost things. I tell people, if again, going back to what I said a moment ago, be that one person. If that's a lot. If you're that one person who is there to support a family caregiver and let them know that. And then there are things that you can do on the no cost level that can really be beneficial. Connecting them to resources. Maybe they're not resources that you have at work, but there are resources that are out there. So help them get connected to the resources that in various organizations, support groups, those kinds of things. And just, you know, doing things like, oh, you know, maybe you can bring in an unpaid speaker for a lunch and learn to talk about wellness or how, you know, to help people with those things. How do we do self-care? How do we have work-life balance? Those kinds. So there are a lot of things that you can do that don't cost you anything financially. And the other thing I always tell people, no matter what you do, always keep track of your ROI. Just like and any good business person, if you spend a dime, how does that affect turnover? How does that affect absenteeism? How does that affect loss of productivity? And I say that to people with full confidence that they'll be very happy with the results.
For the last 17 years, you've been a caregiver to Sharon. How has your faith changed because of that?
It's much stronger, because we've had God to help us through it. And we see how he works in our lives, and it's really amazing. And you know, I'm very grateful for that. Sharon's very grateful for that. And I wouldn't want to think of going through something like this without God. So it's certainly faith is at an all-time high for us.
Ross Woodstock, you are amazing.
Thank you.
And you're a shining example of this show, With God, Anything is Possible. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you, Jack.
Say hi to Sharon.
I will.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Lasula. Thanks for listening. Make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.
Believe in yourself.